Well, I don't see a work group here.
Welcome, everyone. I will call the Senate Committee on Rules to order for one of our last meetings as we race towards sunny die. We have several bills on our schedule, and I think we'll go in order of that you see on the agenda. So I will open up a work session on Senate Bill 1542 and invite Senator Posansky up to tell us a little about this bill.
Yay.
Josh, do you want to start with a summary?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1542 moves the start date for odd-numbered year regular sessions to the Tuesday after the holiday for Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday. The bill has a minimal fiscal impact and no revenue impact.
Okay, Senator Posansky.
Thank you, Chair Burdick and committee members. I apologize. Floyd Prozonsky, State Senator, District 4, parts of Lane and Douglas counties. The purpose of Senate Bill 1542 is to, I guess, bring in some rationale into our process of when we have our long sessions, that we have an ability for us to be completing our work and returning back to our districts by 4th of July. And why? Because many of us have obligations and commitments that we'd like to be a participant in community events, including rodeos, parades, etc. And because of that, there's been times where we have not been able to be part of our community when at a time that I think it's very important for us to be back in our districts. What we do know for from the start of our test of the short sessions and having alternate long sessions is that we have, in fact, demonstrated that we can, in fact, get in and do the work that we are scheduled to do. We can do it in a very efficient manner, and we're showing it, I think, right now as to what our end conclude date for this short session is, the 11th. It sounds like we're going to be up sometime probably the beginning of next week, so we're making deadline. The part that for the long session is that by having a start date on Tuesday after MLK Day, Martin Luther King's Day, that would allow for individuals to, be in their communities for whatever festivities that they want to participate in for MLK, and then we can start our work in the sense of doing our hearing at that time. And our hearings. And when you count up 160 days, and I apologize, I did not bring my cheat sheet with me, but basically what we would show is when I went through this before, all of our end dates would be by June 30th. Depending on which year it is, it varies by a few days either way. And so this is an opportunity for us to be able to complete our work more on a timely basis to allow us to be back in our districts. And Madam Chair and committee members, all of us have been around long enough to understand and know that one of the rules of thumb for this legislature is that you really do not want to be here on 4th of July. And more importantly, you don't want to be here after 4th of July, because everyone gets extremely grumpy, and everyone feels that at that point our work should be done. And if you had the opportunity to be here before we had fixed date times, we have experienced those grumpiness as you get further into July and into August. I know that that's not the situation now, but I do believe this is an opportunity to move forward. Now, I will say that there's been some concerns raised on 1542, or the concept, as to whether we can actually get our work done. When we started this journey, one of the concerns was making certain we have the forecast and we can actually do the final budget. This legislature has demonstrated over the last couple of long sessions that we do not need to wait, and we aren't waiting for the May forecast to do that budgeting. We're actually having a legislative budget being introduced early on in the session, and then we're working off of it. And so I respect for those who were concerned when we first started down this venture as to making certain we had enough time and information to do the work we needed to do. I would submit to you that every time that we've had a long session since we've gone into an annual session basis, we have made those deadlines and have been able to even get out at the end of June.
Thank you. Well, speaking as a veteran of the grumpy session of 2003, along with my vice chair here, and I think Senator Byron,
you know that I was grumpy.
She was the only one who was not grumpy during that session. So, and I think that was when you were on.
I wasn't here in 2003. I was here in 95 when we went until the third week in August.
Yes, yeah, well, that was same with 2003. So thank you for bringing this to us, Senator Pruzanski. Do we have any questions from our two committee members? Thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
Okay, Senator Winters, do you have a motion?
Chair Burdick, I move Senate Bill 1542 to the floor with a due pass.
Senator Winters has moved Senate Bill 1542 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. And I think we'll have Senator Pruzanski carry this. So now we will open a work session on Senate Bill 1556.
Josh. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1556 prohibits counties from filing a lawsuit based on three specific factors. First, a county may not sue based on a statement in a trust deed that the lender's nominee or agent is also the grantee or beneficiary of the loan. Second, a county may not sue based on a document containing that statement being recorded. And third, a county may not sue based on a person failing to record the transfer of an interest in a trust deed when the document transferring the interest has been provided to a person. There is a -9 amendment available on OLIS for your consideration. The amendment excludes cases that were commenced before January 1, 2018 from application of the bill. And with the -9 amendment, excuse me, Senate Bill 1556 has no impact on state or local expenditures and no revenue impact.
Okay, we have a panel of legislators here. Would you like to come forward?
Thank you, Chair Burdick, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Bill Hansel, Senator for District 29, Northeast and North Central Oregon. I want to start off by thanking Chair Pruzanski to my right and Senator Bence to my left for their legal expertise and legislative work that has gone into Senate Bill 1556 and the -9 amendments. Senate Bill 1556 is important legislation to both our community banks and their customers, especially first-time home buyers who need mortgage loans. The Mortgage Electronic Registration System, or MERS, is a complicated national financial tool that is being used. What this amendment does is two things, from my understanding. It allows the current lawsuit that is currently in the courts to continue. And secondly, it provides protection to banks, especially the smaller community banks, from further lawsuits. In addition, Chair Pruzanski has agreed to form a work group in the interim to work on the complicated MERS issue and draft potential legislation for the long session. I believe Oregon lending institutions are in a catch-22, especially in rural areas. Take, for example, the Bank of Eastern Oregon. They are located in 11 rural counties, and in three of those counties, the Bank of Eastern Oregon is the only bank in the entire county. For them to leave the mortgage market would be very detrimental for Oregonian home buyers in much of my part of the state. The -9 will keep the community banks in the mortgage market and give us time to figure out an Oregon way of solving the MERS issue. For the past few weeks, Senator Pruzanski, Senator Bence, and myself have been working on addressing the concerns of counties and to enable the banks to have access to the most favorable Fannie and Freddie Mae loans through MERS. I believe Senator Pruzanski will discuss these efforts. This bill with the -9s will allow the continuation of mortgages by banks and allow the current suit to continue. With the work group, we can bring all sides to the table for a bipartisan work on the long session legislation if needed. Thank you, Chair Burdick, for the opportunity to testify, and I encourage the passage of the bill with the -9 amendments.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. Floyd Pruzanski, State Senator, District 4, parts of Lane and Douglas counties. My part today is to basically pay attention to the -9 amendment that is going to set the course for what we will be doing under the legislation, and also to put on the record the aspiration and goals for the work group that we'll be having during the interim period. The dash nines basically would, in fact, modify the existing bill, Section 3, found at the bottom of page 1 and continuing on page 2. And it actually would be I call it a gut and stuff of taking out the existing Section 3 and putting in the new Section 3. As Senator Hansel has stated, what the goal here is to basically allow the current litigation that has been filed to continue to go its course, but to prohibit any new causes of action or any other claims that could arise before, on, or after the January 1, 2018 date. One part I do want to make certain, this is the part I want to ensure that it's part of the record. When we look at the amendment, it does, in fact, make modifications to Section 2 of the bill, but it does not, and this is the part that I want to be on the record, it does not have any impact on the existing bill, line 21 on page 4, which is the sub 4, under Section 2, which basically states, this section does not affect the rights of borrower under ORS 86.705 to 86.815. Specifically, what we want to ensure and maintain is what the original drafters and advocates for the bill in its original state put forward, and what we all three have agreed, is that we do not want to have consumers and borrowers to have their rights anywhere in intervened based on the legislation that we are proposing. As Senator Hansel also stated, that one of the goals that we have is to have a work group that will be meeting in the interim. We have just sent down, hopefully it has now come to your council, the opinion statement that has come from Legislative Council on February 23rd, addressed to myself from Sean Brennan, regarding the subject of the Dash 9 amendments. Within that document, it does in fact state our intentions and goals of what we want the work group to be doing and what issues that we want them to be taking on. It also brings forward who will be members of that work group. This will be a standalone work group that will be worked through the Judiciary Senate Judiciary Committee. As the, I think the chair and committee members know, it's not uncommon for many committees, and especially judiciary, to have multiple work groups ongoing during the interim. So this will be one of the tasks that we'll take on. And our goal is, with having Senator Vince now a member of the Senate Judiciary Committee, between himself and I, that we will, in fact, be able to be the shepherds for the work group and working it through that process. I won't go into detail as to what's called out for the various issues or the other members, since it is now or will be part of OLIS, for everyone to be able to see what the opinion states.
Thank you. Senator Benz.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Cliff Benz, Senate District 30. I have little to add other than I support the Dash 9 amendments and I support the formation of the work group. The work group will address some of the issues we'd hoped and tried to address in this bill, but we had too little time. The issues are far too complex. The challenge for us in looking at this work group and the evolution, if you will, of the MERS system is to figure out some way of designing a system where folks who borrow money and then need to access the trust deed and note that made its way into that morass known as MERS can trace down the history of the note, the holder of the note, and the appropriate people to bring in when they want to challenge the amount owed on the note. And so that is something none of us could get done in the short period of time we had available, even though we tried. And so I look forward to assisting on the work group. There, I could add some other things about counties who are unhappy about the prohibition about future lawsuits, but I would simply direct them to the permissive joinder portions of our statutes and say they might want to go talk to those who are currently have initiated lawsuit and see if they can join in, and if they're anxious to assert claims for past events. And with that, Madam Chair, I have nothing further to add.
Thank you, and thank you for your work on this. This has been a very complex process, very difficult, and Senator Benz, thank you for working so constructively with Senator Pazansky and Senator Hansel. So wanted to put that on the record. Senator Pazansky, on your work group here, I want to make sure that the scope of the work group, the whole MERS issue was a big issue several sessions ago when we were talking about protections for people who were being foreclosed. And I want to make sure that this work group is going to be focused on this issue that we're talking about now of transparency and not wander far afield into some of the very important policy issues we worked on in the past.
Yeah. Madam Chair and committee members, it's not the goal of the work group to undo what we've already did. It is our goal to actually get into this and really make certain that we're doing the best we can in offering and protecting consumers, our constituents, who are borrowers, and making certain that they have the access to the documentation and the information they need to actually transact business as it pertains to their real property. The issues that we have listed are somewhat focused. They're broad in the general area that we're talking about, but we are not looking at, let's say, reopening that can of worms. But I do want to make a point, and Senator Bence may want to add to it. When I asked him to take a look at what we had on 1556 when we first started our session, not only was he willing to do that, he spent many, 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 many hours, both in day and night and weekend, and trying to put together. And then he showed me his whiteboard in his office as to what he came up with. And there's this little box inside, and that's the MERS box. Once you're inside the MERS box, it's like you can shake it up. You don't know what's in there or where it's at or where it landed. Mm-hmm. And that's some of the stuff that we're going to be looking at, because I think for the transparency part that we really want to ensure, you need to have the ability for these individuals who want to conduct business in the sense of selling their property, know who, if anyone has a lien on it, be able to access that. So some of it is going to be a charge to the MERS family or associates to actually ensure that you have the ability. They say, and we've gotten different reports, you can go online and you can get it really quick. We've had one person that was in our small work group said they had no problem doing that. We had another one that had a problem. So that's the type of issues that we want to work on for Oregonians.
Thank you very much for putting that on the record. Mm-hmm. And also on your composition, I'm understanding that this is not a comprehensive list, and I would hope that you would include good representation from the consumer community on that, and I know you will do that.
And just to call out what's already there, two members that are advocates for borrowers. One will be from the Oregon Law Center. The other would be a member of the state bar who's member of the consumer law and debtor-creditor section. So we're definitely looking for individuals that have that expertise in those areas that can actually contribute to this work group.
Great, and we look forward to your work. Senator Bence, did you have
anything? Just one last thing. This bill, and the situation is reflective of a very common theme that I've seen in this short session and in the last couple of years, and that's this transition from paper to electronic systems. And a lot of folks are left along the road, and in this case, that would include the counties. And where we have built financial systems on recording activities, we have to be sensitive to this transition to the electronic format. And I'm encouraging the counties to step up, because if they don't, many of the systems that we've put together very, very arduously in this building and otherwise, having based upon recorded documents, will go awry, just as happened here. And you can go back, as I did, and trace out what the history of MERS, and you can see that the need to be able to package loans and do all this stuff at a speed that simply is not available under the old approach swamped almost instantly these systems that we had developed to provide other protections. So I'm just saying, the counties, I'm sure, are listening. They need to participate.
Thank you. Message sent. Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
No, I didn't know.
There are two things that are really, I think, central interest to me in this. Is I spent an incredible amount of time in 13 on the foreclosure issue, and in fact, not just 13, but about 2 or 3 years working it through and making sure that we maintain the protections for mortgagees who encountered foreclosure and that whole process. And I want to make sure that whatever we do, we don't endanger that. The Law Center, you know, Sybil and others, NEDCO is very involved, probably the most active. I would encourage you to seek a representative from them as you get into that. But really looking at that, and the courts worked all that out, and sort of in lay shorthand at the end of the day, what the court said was, we don't care what happens in between, but before you can foreclose, you have to demonstrate, before you can do a judicial foreclosure, you have to demonstrate ownership, and how you do that is up to you, but you have to prove that you have ownership at the end of the day. Don't care about what happens in between. I think that's important. From a mortgagee perspective, I think the issue, and I think Senator Hansel really got into it, is having access to the cheapest mortgages that are available, and we all know that that basically comes through the two federal entities, Freddie and that, and so we have to find a way to make those work. You know, we essentially, we put the mediation process in place because it was our only way to drive the feds to the table, in essence, the lenders, or they couldn't foreclose on their notes, and that process works. So very protective of that. I think that's really big in the consumer interest in doing that. I think, Senator Bent, you're right, the county systems, it's the old style, and it worked, but it may not work in the marketplace today. And I know a lot of it comes up over, you know, the suit over, we're not getting the revenue we should get, but I think we need to keep in mind that fees are supposed to be for work that was done. If there's no work that was done, there's no call for a fee. So I think trying to work that out is one of those things that I, having spent my time on it, I applaud you willing to jump into the pool. It's not one that's easy to swim around in.
Thank you. Other questions? Thank you very much. Thank you all for your work on this.
Madam Chair, I've got to go to the Workforce Committee. I'll come back later and for the future testimony, but I've due there, so thank you.
Okay. No more future testimony. This is work session.
Work session.
Okay. That was, this has been a long process. There have been a lot of people participating in this, and I think we are ready for a motion.
Chair Burdick, I move to adopt the -9 amendments to dated February 23rd.
Senator Winters has moved the -9 amendments to Senate Bill 1556. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Winters.
Chair Burdick, I move Senate Bill 1556 as amended to the floor with the due pass.
Senator Winters has moved Senate Bill 1556 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Senator Boquist.
I just want to make sure that I get a ditto from, you know, Senator Beyer down there, because I was the other co-chief sponsor on that miserable run for 3 years. Okay.
Thank you for putting that on the record. Are there any objections? So ordered. I think we'll have Senator Przanski and Senator Bentz co-carry this one. Is that what you had in mind?
Chair, I think, well, I'd like to have Senator
Hansel. Senator Hansel.
Since it's his bill, okay. And then myself and Senator Bentz will decide on who will assist.
Okay. So run that by again.
Hansel primary.
Okay.
And Bentz, we'll put him as secondary.
Okay. We'll have it co-carried by Senators Hansel and Bentz. Thank you for your graciousness. All right. Now we will move to our last bill, work session on HJR 201. Josh.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, HJR 201 proposes an amendment to the Oregon Constitution to allow local governments to issue bonds to finance affordable housing projects. HJR 201A has an indeterminate fiscal impact and no revenue impact.
Okay, to further elaborate on this, we have Harvey Rogers, Allison McIntosh, and Aaron Doyle. That's the bond guy from Portland, right? Okay. Is that our 15? Okay.
There we go.
I thought you were looking for some help from the audience.
That would be great.
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, my name is Harvey Rogers. I'm a lawyer in private practice with the firm of Hawkins, Delafield, and Wood. I'm very fortunate. My group of lawyers does the majority of the bond counsel work in the state of Oregon, and we have for many years. I have a presentation that's up there on the screen. I intend to move through it quickly in the hope that you will ask me questions if I fuzz things up inappropriately.
Quicker the better. Thank you.
So this bill eases a restriction that has been part of the Oregon Constitution for a long time. It allows Oregon local governments to issue general obligation bonds to finance affordable housing projects. General obligation bonds are a very special thing. They're the most secure form of borrowing. They usually have the lowest interest rate. They require a vote of the people. They can only be used to finance capital costs. And they allow the government that receives the voter approval to levy an additional tax to pay the bonds. So they're a complete package with sideboards. Oregon Constitution was drafted, it's had a provision in it that restricts the purchase of stock and also says that local governments can't raise money for, loan their credit to, or in aid of any artificial entity. It's not so clear what it means, but more than 100 years ago, the Oregon Supreme Court considered a case where a city was going to issue general obligation bonds to help out a railroad. Now, 100 years ago, railroads coming to town were about the most wonderful thing that could happen to a community, so there was a clear public interest. The Oregon Supreme Court said this provision of the Constitution does not allow general obligation bonds to be issued for facilities with private involvement. Now, these days, when a local government borrows a substantial amount of money, they have to get an opinion of nationally recognized bond counsel. That's what I do, what my firm does. We operate under national standards that say we can't give an opinion if a reasonable judge might decide otherwise. Since 100 years ago, the Oregon Supreme Court said you can't issue GO bonds for a private railroad, since they haven't said anything interesting for the last 100 years on this issue, bond counsel can't give an unqualified opinion. This allows GO bonds to be issued for affordable housing. There's a great deal of economic activity around the country associated with affordable housing, and there are some really cool techniques out there, including low-income housing tax credits that the federal government provides. There are federal lending programs, and there are also private developers who would like to participate in affordable housing projects. The current provisions of the Constitution require a local government that finances affordable housing with GO bonds to own and control the whole thing. So basically, they can't have private involvement, can't take advantage of low-income housing tax credits, can't involve private developers in a meaningful way. So those tools are not available. That's where we are. This amendment to the Constitution would allow local governments with voter approval to issue general obligation bonds to finance affordable housing projects. Be happy to try and answer questions.
Thank you. Would this have any impact on the risk involved in these bonds?
Risk from the bond owner's perspective, from the local government's perspective?
I mean, would this change the risk equation in any way?
General obligation bonds are the most secure form of borrowing that a local government can do. And so from a bond owner's perspective, you wouldn't be creating a riskier thing. It does allow local governments to finance projects they currently can't finance. And if they picked a really crummy project, then what you would have is a borrowing and taxes levied to pay for a really crummy project. That's a form of risk, but this is not this is conservatively structured, and there are not risks outside of that.
But that risk would exist with or without private partnerships.
You could always do something stupid, yes.
We do it all the time.
All right. Did you guys want to add to that?
Yes, very quickly. Chair Burdick, Vice Chair Winters, members of the committee, my name is Allison McIntosh. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Housing Alliance. I just wanted to say that HJR 201 has been discussed. It was discussed in a work group created by the House Human Services and Housing Committee for several months and moved out of that committee unanimously as well as off the House floor unanimously before coming here. There's been a lot of smart folks around the table really trying to figure out how to craft this in a narrow but smart way. I won't try to go over what Harvey said. I think the most important impact of this would be that if a local government were to issue bonds for affordable housing and we were to pass this constitutional amendment, those bond dollars could go further because they could be paired with additional resources. And in addition to that, and perhaps more importantly, smaller jurisdictions who don't have housing staff at their disposal could also consider bonds as a way to meet their affordable housing needs in their community because they would know that they could partner with experienced nonprofit or for-profit housing developers who could build, own, and control the housing after it was built.
Okay. Chair Burdick, Vice Chair Winters, members of the committee, I'm Erin Doyle here on behalf of the League of Oregon Cities. And outside of saying arousing Me Too and yes, and good bills should pass, I'll just state that this bill will provide cities another means to leverage our city resources besides the traditional property tax abatements that were usually the only financial tool we were able to offer. By being able to invest in private affordable housing projects, we can leverage other sources of funding, stretch public dollars further, and reduce the long-term burden on city resources. These bonding efforts will meet with an important public purpose that helps us address needs that we find exist across our cities. But only those cities that have the capacity and the local desire through a local conversation and a local election will use these funds in this way. For those reasons, we ask for your support in HJR 201. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Thank you. You've done a
thank
good
you.
Job of explaining this. And for those of us who think, increased supply is such a fundamental part of the solving the housing crisis and the homelessness crisis that we have. So thank you for bringing this to us, and thank you for traveling down here.
Thank you
tell
us very
about
much.
It. Okay. Chair Burdick. Senator Winters.
I move HJR 201 to the Senate floor with a be adopted.
Senator Winters has moved HJR 201 to the Senate floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Winters, would you like to carry this? Okay. Committee, stay on notice. We are on 1 hour notice. Heaven knows what we're going to get.
We have another meeting today. That's all we care about.
Heaven knows what we're going to get next, so stay tuned.
Oh, so we might have another meeting today.
But for now, we are adjourned.